from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Muir Woods is the southernmost home for returning coho salmon, and state officials have expressed concern over their becoming extinct in the Lagunitas and Redwood Creek watersheds due to the ongoing drought. However, recent rains have allowed the coho salmon to return to local streams earlier than expected, and in this Forum segment, we want to assess the future of the genetically unique and much-admired coho salmon, which remain endangered in an area beyond Muir Woods and running from California's border with Oregon down to Big Sur. Joining us here in studio is Doug Karpa. He's Turtle Island Restoration Network legal program director, and he's involved in the Salmon Protection Watershed Network, which is called SPAWN, which does restoration work at the Lagunitas Creek. And welcome, Doug Karpa.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Gordon Becker here in studio. And Gordon Becker is senior scientist with the Center for Ecosystem Management and Restoration. Welcome, Gordon Becker.
Thank you.
Good to have you both. And let me begin, Doug, with you. I know from reading, well, what SPAWN has put out here, that when we're talking about just these two watersheds, we're talking about really two separate populations. And if we're going to do something to really make things safe for the coho salmon, we're going to have to treat each one individually or differently to a great extent. But let's talk about the problem overall from your perspective. I mean, they weren't spawning, and I know there are generational differences, but in the grand scheme of things, well, the rains over the last week have allowed the coho salmon to return, as I said, to local streams, and so that's positive.
Yeah, it is positive, although I think one of the key things to keep in mind is the California coho is endangered because it's down to somewhere between 6% and 15% of what it was in the 1940s. And, you know, that's down to a lot of impacts from fishing, logging, development roads. And now we're looking at a situation where the Lagunitas Creek population is in what's known as an extinction vortex. The population is so small that it really any small change or disturbance can wipe it out. So I think probably today, yes, they're coming back. The rains are good. That probably means the coho's dodged a bullet rather than saying it's now on the path to a robust recovery. We've got more work to do.
Well, indeed we do. But I'm wondering also if this is just a microcosm for the problems all over the West. I mean, numbers have dropped dramatically.
Dramatically, yeah. And I think that's right. You know, there's the Chinook and Steelhead are also in trouble going forward. And a lot of these impacts that have been affecting all of those species. And, you know, we have, as everyone knows, a lot of water issues in the West. And confronting climate change going forward, it's really pretty unknown, I think, what the future is going to hold here.
Well, Gordon Becker, there are big challenges with habitat. I mean, and yet, from what I'm reading, there are some major efforts going on, especially up in the Russian River, massive efforts. Let's talk about those. What are you doing?
In the Russian, it's a combination of efforts. And I'd like to point out that one of the big things that's happening in the Russian is the attention and the level of spending. I think that's important to recognize that a lot of watersheds, particularly if they don't have major water supply projects, don't have a mechanism for funding to happen. But because we have a biological opinion operating for the Sonoma County Water Agency, and we have the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation in particular, putting a lot of money into maintaining and expanding the coho population there, we really have a lot of optimism about what's going on. And I can talk about the programs if you'd like.
Well, let's talk in a larger sense again, if we could, before we get to those programs, because we've been talking about the drought here and development, but also there's a lack of vegetation that's playing a key role, isn't there?
One of the things that happens across the state and in coastal watersheds is encroachment on our streams and creeks. That's absolutely right. And so a creek needs and a stream needs room to do its thing. It needs to function like a creek. And that means meandering. That means having erosion episodically. It means that the creek needs to be essentially given some room. And we have intense land use pressures in California on the coast. And sometimes we've just gotten too close to the creek, and that doesn't allow it to perform as it should to service people and fish.
So if the Russian River has a good deal of revenue as opposed to other places, how is it using that money? What's it doing?
It's doing direct habitat improvement, particularly in the Dry Creek area. The Sonoma County Water Agency's facilities are in the Dry Creek tributary of the Russian, and so it's doing direct habitat work there. And there's also an intense monitoring effort, and some research is coming out of that program that's really never been done before, and we're starting to really understand the relationship between flows and habitat and the relationship between flows and survivorship of these juvenile fish that are rearing in the tributaries of the Russian.
And Doug Harpa, we were talking in the last segment about some of the problems with agriculture and water use, and one of our guests, Ellen Hanek, was saying there's a fairly wise use of water, at least from her perspective, by agriculture, even though it's about 80% of the water use. But there are some real tensions that are going on between farmers and the salmon fisheries. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, and that's not as much of an issue in certainly Lagunitas Creek, where
I'm talking about broader, more broadly.
I do know that certainly there's been significant issues with considerations of tapping in groundwater and wells being put in. Sonoma County actually just recently, through a very long process, finally has enacted an ordinance to regulate how close – getting back to this issue of encroachment that Gordon was talking about, of the agricultural interests pulling water out of the streams – essentially for use in crops. And then there's also ongoing clearing of vegetation as well, not so much on the water side, but certainly making sure that encroachment into the vegetated riparian buffer slows down or stops or is reversed is also an ongoing problem for a lot of those headwaters.
Go back to the specifics, if we may, about Redwood Creek and Lagunitas. I mean, there's some real generational differences too. Excuse me, and the hatcheries are being used as well.
They are, and I think that's really not a good sign. I've been in conversations with several of the fisheries biologists who are involved in that project. Usually, if you're pulling fish out to take them to hatcheries, that's a kind of a heroic measure at the end of the day when the population doesn't seem to be really holding its own. And as you probably know, one of the year classes seems to be completely gone from Redwood Creek, maybe two of the three. And, you know, there it's an issue of this legacy of past land uses and degradation. There's now restoration efforts, but it's coming pretty late in the game. There's also issues with runoff from roads, which is coming to the fore now. There's new work coming out of Northwest Fisheries Science Center and Washington State University looking at urban runoff and road runoff, and has sublethal toxic effects that have an impact over time. And then certainly in Lagunitas Creek, which is the single biggest population that's really surviving south of Mendocino, there's again significant development going on, and that has an effect of encroaching on the vegetation and clearing the vegetation, and that removes the ability of the forest to produce the large woody debris in the streams that provide habitat, control water flows. If you have a lot of paving, you have a tremendous amount of runoff that's just faster. We, you know, as anybody in California knows, we have long dry periods and then big storms. And those storms are going to get bigger with climate change, so far as we can tell. And with all of that increased development and covering of the surfaces, when that rain hits, it's just much faster for it to get into the stream. And so if you're a salmon in that stream, you're all of a sudden having to deal with much, much higher flows. That takes a lot of energy, so that by the time those salmon get out into the ocean, they don't have the energy reserves to do well, and then when it's time to come back, they each successive run is a little lower. Some years are better than others.
I don't want to keep piling on all these problems that we've outlined here, because you know they're pretty formidable to say the least. But you also have traffic jams in the road that's leading to Muir Woods Monument that really affect this whole picture.
That's a lot of cars have all sorts of impacts from oil, tires, brakes. And all of that traffic is a major issue. Then, without going into that too much, deeply.
What about the hatcheries, though, Gordon Becker? I mean, there's a lot of captive breeding going on there, and I guess some feel that perhaps this will keep the coho salmon alive, and help to regenerate. What are your thoughts?
I think this point that was made that this is a last-ditch effort is very important, and We saw this in Santa Cruz and San Mateo counties, where there was a very active program of hatchery and letting juveniles go into the streams throughout both of those counties. And yet we haven't seen coho in most of those coastal watersheds in recent years. So the track record isn't good. And that being said, the tools that are being applied, genetic tools and rearing tools and dispersal tools, are just beyond anything that's been used before. It's a very sophisticated effort. And so there is reason for optimism. But I think it's important to keep our eye on the point that this is a last-ditch effort. And what we really should be focused on are the types of habitat improvements and water conservation efforts that are going to keep these fish around into the future.
Well, I think it's safe to say that most of you who are listening would like to keep these fish around for the future. But you may have your own concerns about the problem we're talking about, as well as the solution. And I'd like to invite you to join the program, hear your thoughts, hear your feelings, but also any questions or comments, obviously, you have to bring into the mix here. Our toll-free number is available now. It's 866-733-6786. You can join us by calling that number. Again, it's 866-733-6786, or you can join us by emailing us. Our email address is forum@kqed.org. Or you can post questions or comments immediately onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. We're discussing the plight of Bay Area coho salmon, how they're being the kind of impact that the drought is having and other circumstances. And there's a petition drive, Doug Carper. You want to at least talk about that for a moment?
So one of the key issues that we've been confronting is Spawn does 90% of our work is restoration. And, of course, if you restore more slowly, then habitat's being destroyed. That's the same problem Gordon and I have both been talking about. And so we have a petition drive to ask the Marin County Board of Supervisors to craft some science-based, common-sense rules to protect that vegetated buffer and to make sure that any impervious surfaces or housing or building happens away from the stream. It's pretty basic, but it's the recommendation.
And how can people fix their signature to that?
Yeah, and that you can find that at our website, which is seaturtles.org. Or also you could go to bit.ly/coho salmon action, all one word, and sign on to that. Could also call the Marin County Board of Supervisors directly and just let them know you would like to see them take action. It's been long overdue. We've been working on this for decades now, and we're out of time.
Doug Harpa, again, is Legal Program Director at Turtle Island Restoration Network, involved in the Salmon Protection Watershed Network, SPAWN, and they do restoration work at the Lagunitas Creek. Gordon Becker here in studio with us, as well as Senior Scientist with the Center for Ecosystem Management and Restoration. And you are welcome to join us. Again, toll-free 866-733-6786. You can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Gordon, a listener writes, do naturally spawned salmon behave differently than those from a fishery? If not, can't artificially fertilized coho be placed into Lagunitas in years like this? Actually, let me go first to Doug with this, and then we'll go to you on the next.
As to whether they behave differently, I'm not sure. But I would caution listeners that there are potentially issues. One of the concerns about going into hatcheries is that something like hospitals, hatcheries are great places to pick up infections and parasites, which may end up making the issues worse. And ultimately, at the end of the day, if you have a degraded habitat that you're putting fish back into, the habitat is still degraded, and maybe they'll be there for that 1 year. But in order to bring the population back from where it is now to something that's recovered, which is on the order of 20 times the population that we've got today, you have to have salmon that are going out to the ocean and coming back and spawning. So even if we rely on hatcheries, that's not going to fix the problem, because you're just putting them right back in the same, putting them back in the same kettle of fish that they were in before.
Well, apropos of that, get your response to this, Gordon Becker. A listener writes, there have been far deeper and longer droughts in California's history, last 1,000 years or so. So how did the salmon and lots of other plant and animal species survive then? Clearly they did. So reductions now must be caused by habitat change other than drought, yes? In other words, man-made habitat alteration and destruction.
That's clearly a big part of the problem, but what I like to call this is a drought on a drought. So the way that we use water in coastal California watersheds is it's very intense. We take a lot of the water out of streams. And so you're asking the fish to respond to a situation where when there was little impairment of the runoff, they were holding on in cold pools, sometimes even isolated pools over the hot, dry summer. And now you're asking them to hold on in nothing when if you've have enough groundwater extraction, enough direct diversion that these seeps and springs at the headwaters of our watersheds are actually being tapped. There's just not that small increment of water that keeps the water cold enough and oxygenated enough to allow the fish to survive over the summer. It's incredibly important that this last bit of water is protected, identified and protected. And it's actually the law that, you know, water in the state of California is owned by the people of California. And you don't have a right to own it. You have a right to use it. And fish have the first right to the water. And I don't want to push a legal justification, but I am trying to point out that the voters of California and the politicians of California have decided that these are important species to us. And there are very strong protections in place, but we don't have the resources to identify those water needs for all the fish populations and to enforce the types of water rights provisions and, frankly, the curtailment of illegal diversion that goes on in much of the California coast to allow that those rules to be enforced and allow for the success of the species.
We should mention here that the Emergency Drought Relief Act actually passed the House just yesterday. I think it's unlikely that it will get through the Senate. In fact, Senator Feinstein will be talking about her report on torture tomorrow in our opening hour. But Senator Feinstein has said there are too many environmental problems that are linked to that bill, and it's been a very, shall we say, contentious bill between Republicans who sponsored it and Democrats who now are showing opposition.
It's interesting that you'd bring that up. Jared Huffman, you know, is one of our – he's really one of the great things that that's happened to California Water recently. You know, he's in those.
The whole program with him on ocean effects.
Absolutely. And he's bringing a lot of rationality to a process in the U.S. Congress that's just not rational. And we, frankly, I think we all fear for what happens when the Republicans control both houses of Congress in relation to fish, because one of the strongest protections we have is the Endangered Species Act. And I would urge listeners to do whatever they can to maintain the protections of the Endangered Species
Act.
What
can they do? Joanna tweets, what can we do to help save these salmon? How can we get involved?
Oh, let me take that one on. Yeah, I think probably to leverage on what Gordon was saying, be vocal. Speak out. I think there are a lot of decision makers from local government levels. Certainly the Marin County Board of Supervisors, I think, will listen to creating some of these common sense rules, science-based rules, to basically help restore these habitats. That's going to be really, really critical, and at very local level. And also at the state level, getting more funding for restoration. There's a tremendous number of organizations that are doing restoration work. That takes money to do. It's ideally you want to avoid the need for restoration, but if you've already got the damaged systems, then you have to repair them, and that takes money. And if we don't do it quickly enough, we'll run out of time while we're still in process. So those are two things that listeners can do.
Good. And let's go to our listeners. We have a caller here who wants to talk about restoration. Marie, good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, I just got back from Southern Humboldt County, and there's a fabulous organization called Sanctuary Forest that is doing just that, doing the grassroots organizing and getting these rivers back in shape. And they're using a number of really inventive things. They've gotten the pot farmers to use large holding tanks to keep the water in the spring so that in the summer they can stop pumping from the rivers. And they're also working on easements with people so that they can get in and work on the rivers. They found that the beavers being destroyed on the rivers really was very detrimental to the coho, so they're recreating beaver-like dams until they can get beavers to repopulate. And Sanctuary Forest and Tasha McKee are just doing fabulous work up there, and they've made a very big difference. And the coho are coming back. I was just thrilled to go up and help them with the fundraiser, which of course is funny. We're baking cookies to restore these precious, precious rivers. It's just crazy. With a little bit more money, they could do so much more.
Well, keep baking, Marie, and thank you for your call. Gordon Becker, you know that outfit.
Absolutely. I had the honor of working in that watershed extensively, and it's beautiful country, but I think the points that were made there were just excellent. It takes those kinds of efforts to keep fish populations going, and Sanctuary Forest and the other groups working in that watershed have done an extraordinary job of bringing the community together and getting everybody involved in this. And you achieve when you put in a tank for a particular farmer, a pond for a particular farmer, so that you can forego summer diversions, you achieve a very small increment of flow. So it takes this kind of comprehensive approach to deal with the cumulative effects of the many water diversions that are going on in all our watersheds.
And we'll bring another caller on. Betsy, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much. I have just learned that Muir Beach, which extends above at Muir Beach, where Redwood Creek exits and has the problem with the salmon, that Muir Beach gets their water from groundwater. And I don't quite understand the terminology, but it seems to be under Redwood Creek. And I believe the issue is going to come up, or the water permit is coming up for discussion at LAFCO this week. And so I was wondering if you had any information about that.
Doug Harper?
Yeah, I'm afraid I don't. That's the first I've heard of the water permit issues, although, thinking about the issue, it doesn't surprise me that is based on tapping into groundwater there. I think probably I should thank you for bringing that to my attention. I'll certainly give that a look.
Well, there's about a $50 million restoration of the marshlands there, I think, in the tidal lagoon at Muir
Beach. Right. And that's a really – if people want to get a sense of what restoration can look like, it's a really good spot to take a look at a better functioning ecosystem. A lot of the issues with a lot of these streams is the incision that the stream beds have dropped over time because of continued erosion and the high stream flows that I was mentioning earlier. And what's happened there is a real effort to expand the floodplain on the banks of the creek, so that when these floods come in, the water spills over onto that floodplain. It's vegetated. The water slows down. The salmon fry, and they can get some refuge from the flows. The sediment settles out, and then that helps preserve a lot of the ecosystem functions.
They're also mixing fish from other watersheds, and I guess this is good. I mean, in terms of a diversity of fish population and sort of mitigating against inbreeding, that sort of thing. Gordon Becker? Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's good. I would say it's necessary. It's the only thing that's left to do. And fortunately, we have the very talented folks at the Southwest Center in Santa Cruz that are guiding that restoration. But the idea that you have to take fish from one watershed and put them into a watershed means that there's not enough fish in the watershed that you're trying to restore.
The problem is clear, yeah. And another listener tweets, salmon and steelhead suffer the most from habitat loss via dams. Another listener writes, Republicans that hunt fish love the environment. Stop the U.S. versus them assumption. When did KQED become an affiliate of the Democratic National Committee? all right. Let that stand. Another caller. In fact, let me go to Gail next. Gail, you're on. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. This is Gail Seymour. I'm a senior environmental scientist supervisor with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. And we've worked really closely with CMAR and very closely with SPON, National Park Service, Army Corps of Engineers, NOAA Fisheries, state parks, many, many entities. And I just wanted to say that everything that I've heard so far has been excellent, and thank you so much for this forum. As you know, I wasn't in early on the conversation, but as you know, the Department of Fish and Wildlife did collect some of the juvenile coho salmon from Redwood Creek this past summer. And we did that because we want to preserve the genotype, because there are so few coho salmon coming back into Redwood Creek. And for the entire region or evolutionary significant unit, we want to preserve the genetic diversity. And so, as Gordon had mentioned, that we don't have much choice but to actually do some hatchery rearing and also to use other coho from other watersheds and bring them back into neighboring watersheds. We're at the 11th hour, and that's really the only choice that we have. So I wanted to mention that. As far as restoration goes, Spawn and others have been doing excellent work in the watershed. But with restoration, we take one step forward, and then with overdevelopment, we take 10 steps back. So it's really important that the public understands that we really need to talk to our decision makers and our politicians about permitting and regulations and enforcement and compliance and so forth.
Gally, thank you.
One more. Pardon me?
I was just thanking you for the call, and then you said one more thing. So add that one more thing quickly, if you could.
Okay. The one more thing I wanted to say is that we all have to work together. We are all responsible for the degradation of our watersheds on this planet. And I know that there's a lot of bad press coming down on the National Park Service as far as the roads and the visitors. But the National Park Service and others, other stakeholders are doing excellent work, and we just need to all work together and support each other, and we don't need bad press out there.
All right. Again, we thank you for the call, and we'll go to another caller from Southern Oregon. Hi, good morning.
Good morning. I'd just like to ask your guests if there's any consideration being given to the problem of some of the natural predators, the sea lions and seals, and also the cormorants that are killing or eating the fry before they even get to the ocean, and those critters are being protected when our salmon are not.
Yeah, Gordon Becker.
This is, to mix our fish metaphors, this is a red herring. I'm sorry to quash it in that way, but salmon operate off of throwing massive numbers of fish out into the world, and there should be enough fish so that sea lions can have them. And in some very rare instances, such as I'm familiar with the Washington Locks, there have to be programs to keep them keep sea lions away from a place where the fish are bottlenecked. But the idea that we should do a predator control program, I think that would be absolutely the last thing I would recommend.
Let me thank the caller. And Grant writes, someone reported that the salmon spawning runs along the coast of Humboldt are bouncing back a bit. They saw salmon last week again for the first time in years. That's a good positive note to end on.
Yeah.
Again, people want to go to your petition, Doug, or help out? Information.
Yeah, come... I think, well, one thing that if you want to get your hands dirty, literally, is to come out to the Lagunitas Creek watershed and do restoration work with us. We're out there most Saturdays. And our current petition drive to get some science-based common sense rules in place in Marin County can be found at seaturtles.org. Sea turtles is actually what we do a fair bit of as well.
And let Gordon give his information, if you could, Gordon Becker.
Yeah, we're the Center for Ecosystem Management and Restoration, and we work closely with Trout Unlimited on a lot of programs that we think are very important in coastal watersheds.
And we thank you for contributing this important segment. Gordon Becker, again, Senior Scientist with the Center for Ecosystem Management and Restoration. Doug Karpa, Legal Program Director of the Turtle Island Restoration Network, and also... involved in the SPAWN program, that is Salmon Protection Watershed Network. Thank you for being a part of this program. Mike Rowe will join us in the next hour. Stay tuned for that. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.